We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Oh, we've got two up and two down. Western Michigan came in and Michigan dropped them like a bad habit. Washington came in and they did the same to the tune of 343 yards rushing for Michigan, only allowing 50 for the Washington Huskies. We've got so much to get to. Trevor Keegan is going to stop by the podcast. Excited to get a chance to talk to another offensive lineman and get his reaction to a dominant blocking performance. We'll do all of that here on In the Trenches.
Let's go In the Trenches with John Jansen. The former Wolverines captain and Michigan Sports Hall of Famer will take you inside the locker room with players and coaches.
To obtain that legacy, your legacy, you know,
well,
I just want to
really, it's really Jake Long, it's Taylor Lewan, those
Long,
guys.
Taylor Lewan, yeah. Yeah. And I just want to make it proud. I want to do it myself. I have high goals, and I want to continue to, you know, rock the 77.
Once again, here's John Jansen.
Welcome back, friends. And we want to remind you to go to MGO Blue Podcast, where yesterday on Defend the Block, you heard Michigan men's basketball director of basketball operations, Chris Hunter, along with Brian Bush. Tomorrow on Thursday's Conquering Heroes, a special edition with Sam Brew, a Paralympic gold medalist in the high jump. He is currently here at Michigan in the medical school. And don't forget, Friday, a little preview, keys to the game, as well as a little locker room speech for Saturday's matchup with the Northern Illinois University Huskies. And then Saturday, following the game, you'll get a full recap of the win over the Northern Illinois Huskies. But at this time, I want to bring in my partner, Brian Bush. Mr. Bush, how was your weekend?
Outstanding. It was great. It was awesome to catch up with my good friend Tony Castricone and to send him back to Seattle with a nice little loss. I hope they win out, but they didn't get the win on Saturday.
That had to feel good to, you know, you guys were roommates for 5 years. And for those that don't remember, we did the preview of the Michigan football schedule, and the voice of the Washington Huskies is Tony Castricone. He was Brian Bush before Brian Bush. And so his voice was probably very familiar to a lot of Wolverine fans, but you never want to lose. And you never want to lose to a friend, but when you win and you beat a friend, it's a sweet feeling.
It's tremendous. And hey, they don't get a chance to get back at us until 2028, based on how this all went. When I guess what you can have you and Doug Karsh do that. What were you guys going to do?
Oh, we're going to do a little flight, a little tour of the coast, a little tour of the stadium from the air, as well as a trip. Obviously, if you listened to the pregame show, a trip to the Metropolitan Grill.
Yes, that was. Maybe I'll dig that up for a future podcast, because I kid you not, John has never been more prepared for a segment on our pregame show than he was to break down what he would have ordered had there been a game last year in Washington at the Metropolitan Grill. But our focus today is on football, is on our 7 from 77, and we begin the first few just putting the finishing touches on Saturday's win. You know, we got your initial reaction. You can hear that from, well, Sunday mornings in the Trenches recap episode. But after watching the film, just how complete of an effort was that from the offensive line, the running game, just the attack overall? Because, you know, Washington, they had some size, certainly compared to Western Michigan, but the Wolverines owned that thing.
They did, and the on both sides of the ball, they owned it. They only allowed 50 for Washington to rush, but Michigan rushing for 343 yards. I talked about last week in that Western Michigan game, it was a matter of fine-tuning a few things and making sure that they were hip-to-hip on some of those double teams, that shoulders were square. And what I really liked, when you run a counter play, and Michigan ran it time after time this past Saturday against Washington, and they ran it old school where they pulled both the backside guard and tackle. And what I liked was when you pull, a lot of times offensive linemen have a tendency to turn their shoulders so that the shoulders are square to the sideline, which means then when you get to the hole, you've got to turn back. And a lot of times that inside linebacker will catch you off guard. They'll run through and they'll make a play in the backfield. Both the guard and tackle on both sides did a great job of stepping back, crossing over, keeping their shoulders square to the line of scrimmage so that they could get up in the hole, pick off that inside linebacker. The tackle could kick out whoever was there, and you had gaping holes for both Blake Corum and Hassan Haskins. That was an absolute thing of beauty. It wasn't perfect by any means, but it was as good as it's been in a long, long time.
Number two, defensively, grade this team through two games. There have been a few plays sprinkled in that were big for the opposition. Western on week one, Washington last week. So there are things to work on, but you know, if you started the start of the season, you said, hey, you're going to give up 24 points to this juncture of the season, I think fans would have been pretty happy with that.
I think they all would. I would have been thrilled with it, because we didn't know what to expect with the new defense. And what I'm seeing so far from week one to week two, there was a huge jump in communication of understanding from a linebacker's perspective what's going on up front. Where do I fit in? You know, Josh Ross had three quarterback hurries. He led the team in quarterback hits. You know, and it's just when you have that ability to put pressure on a quarterback from the linebacker position, then you can you strike fear into an opponent's offense and their offensive line, because now they're trying to communicate, all right, who are the linebackers that are blitzing? How are we going to pick them up? How are we going to defend and try and block an Aiden Hutchinson, who just had 2.5 sacks? And you heard Coach talk after the game, and I've heard him say this a number of times. Other people have commented on it. At the end of the game in the fourth quarter, when Washington was almost exclusively passing the ball because they had to try and score quickly, they were putting a minimum of two guys on Aiden Hutchinson. And at sometimes there were three, which means if you do that with a fullback, a tight end, or a receiver, that's just less targets for the quarterback to be looking for. It makes it easier for the defensive backs. If you use a guard, now all of a sudden everybody else is singled up, and you've got to expect Taylor Upshaw to get a win against his guy, which he did. He had half a sack. Or a David Ojabo, which he did. He had a sack as well. Now what I want to see moving forward is a little bit more push from the inside, from a Chris Hinton, from a Mozzie Smith, from those guys that are those the nose or the three technique. Push that pocket a little bit and flush the quarterback out. And when you do, you're going to flush him right out to one of those defensive ends.
Number three on our 7 from 77, let's talk about the passing game a little bit. To this point, through two games, Cade McNamara has only attempted 26 passes. Now, with the success that this running game has had, with the fact that Michigan got J.J. McCarthy some work late in the game against Western Michigan, it makes sense, right? But hasn't thrown a whole lot. Receivers are in unique situation with the Ronnie Bell injury. This is the final tune-up this week before Big Ten play. Do you want to see maybe Michigan take some more opportunities to pass? The run game, with how well it's been going, could probably win this game, and Michigan may not need to pass with how this matchup is. But do they need to see a little bit more just to give them more seasoning before Rutgers, at Wisconsin, at Nebraska, et cetera?
You got to get a game speed rhythm, and that's what you're going to be looking for when you see them play against Northern Illinois. Do I expect them to come out and throw the ball 50 times? No.
Sure.
But I do want to see them throw some play action in there. We saw some passes to Blake Corum, but you've got to be able to get the receivers involved as well. There was a beautiful pass to Cornelius Johnson, a little back shoulder throw, a good adjustment by Cornelius, and a great throw by Cade, but you still need to see some production from some of those other guys, and you want to get them into a flow, and so that they understand, all right, I'm on a certain look, on a certain call, I'm going to release inside, I'm going to release outside, whatever it is, so that they get comfortable at game speed of getting off the line of scrimmage, running their routes, and if it's a rub route, making sure that the timing works out. If it's a wheel route, making sure, again, the timing works out. All of those different things, you've got to be able to get timing at game speed. But in no way am I concerned that they haven't thrown the ball enough. What I love about our passing game is that there's been zero turnovers. You know, Cade McNamara, as he did last year, as he's done through two games this year, in his time of throwing the ball, he hasn't turned the ball over. And he's been able to distribute it effectively. Now, one thing that I would like to see an improvement on is his understanding of where the passing lanes are. He's had a number of balls batted down, and they have led to some of his incompletions, obviously. So I would like him to understand a little bit better of the rush, where it's coming from, how his offensive line is picking it up and blocking it, so that if he needs to take a step to the left or the right, if he needs to move in the pocket a little bit so that he can get a clear view of those receivers, the tight ends, or the running backs, that those balls aren't batted down anymore.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have. It's a good issue to have. This is all good. Was just curious your thoughts. All right, number four, let's talk about the weekend outside of Ann Arbor. Just some quick hitters on some of the games and storylines that took place. The big story in college football was Oregon winning in Columbus over Ohio State. Certainly, a non-conference loss does not end things for almost any team. But it does feel like that defense can be had.
It can be. I mean, you can see that there's holes in their rush defense. There's holes in the secondary. There was a lot of questions after the game about their defensive coordinator. Do I think that they'll be able to patch things up? Certainly.
Sure.
They've got the talent to be able to do it, but it becomes a matter of execution. And how about this for 48 hours worth of football? Tom Brady defeats the Dallas Cowboys. Having been a former Washington football team member, that was beautiful to watch. And then on Saturday, the Oregon Ducks in Columbus take down the Buckeyes. It was a spectacular 48 hours of football.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Iowa 27, Iowa State 17. Sixth straight win for the Hawkeyes in the series, with Northwestern, I think, probably reloading at this point. Wisconsin already with a loss. They fell to Penn State in their opener at home. It feels like Iowa's firmly the West favorite now.
They certainly are. And when you look at, you know, just the standings in the Big Ten West, when you look at everything that they're trying to do out there, Iowa, Wisconsin is, you know, they just don't have the same running attack that they've normally had. Graham Mertz hasn't been the quarterback that we saw against Illinois to start off the 2020 season. So in the West, it's clearly the Hawkeyes' side of the division to take. And we'll see what happens, who ends up earning that spot to Indianapolis. But it'll be a lot of fun to watch what goes on over there.
Anything else in the Big Ten that stood out? Those were the two big stories. Michigan State gets to 2-0. Your boy Scott Frost, two straight wins. Maybe they'll extend him again. What else stood out to you in the Big
Ten?
Who
needs to take a shot at him when I've got you? You can do all that for me. I'm interested to see what Michigan State does this week against Miami.
Yep.
Big matchup. We've seen them, obviously, against Youngstown State. We kind of knew what was going to happen. They just out-physicaled them, you know, and they just had better athletes. Against Northwestern, now, we don't necessarily know, is Northwestern all that bad? Are they good? What's going to go on? But what we do know is that, you know, Michigan State looked really good against them. So when it comes down to it, what is Michigan State going to be? We'll find out a heck of a lot more this weekend. But, you know, don't be sleeping on the Spartans right now. They've got a terrific start to their season.
Nationally, Texas A&M barely surviving Colorado. Notre Dame rallying to knock off Toledo. Those were some surprises that didn't quite get to upsets. And then you see Arkansas rolling Texas. Welcome to the SEC, mm-hmm. Longhorns. And USC blown out at home by Stanford, and now without a head coach, well, at least an actual, not an interim head coach, mm-hmm. as Clay Helton was relieved of his duties on Monday afternoon. I'll tell you what, outside of Alabama, there's a lot of question marks. There's a lot of things that you wonder with Ohio State losing, Iowa State already going down, Clemson, Georgia, that game. Notre Dame has been close to losing twice. This is a really interesting – this might be a chance for teams that haven't traditionally gotten into the playoff conversation to get there.
Yeah, I could have had the trifecta if Notre Dame would have lost, then it would have been the Cowboys, the Buckeyes.
But if they lose on Peacock, did it really happen?
Did it really happen? I don't know. Ask Mike Tirico. but it's this has already been a very interesting college football season. And you know what? You still have – kind of your usual cast of characters up there in regards to, obviously, Alabama, the clear-cut number one in the country right now. Georgia, I think, is playing extremely well with the speed that they have at linebacker and just really their entire defense. Oklahoma is still 2-0 right now. Oregon, as we've mentioned, is 2-0. So there's a lot of the same characters. But look out for – well, I don't want to say look out for, but keep an eye on Texas A&M because they just lost their quarterback. And – you know what? Right now, they're ranked number 7 in the country. I don't necessarily think that it's sustainable for them and what Jimbo Fisher's continually trying to build out there, but it'll be interesting to see how they can move forward and try and manufacture some wins.
Yeah, I mean, that was the situation for A&M against Colorado. Haynes King, their starting quarterback, went out, and yeah, they only mustered 10 points, but they get the win. All right, number 5, looking ahead to this weekend, a few big matchups. First in the Big Ten, Indiana hosting 8th-ranked Cincinnati. This is a chance for the Hoosiers to bounce back, and this is a chance for Cincinnati. They've got at Indiana and at Notre Dame the next 2 weeks. If they win both of those two games, there won't be the knock on this team to say you didn't play anybody in the non-conference if they happen to go and win out.
Well, and soon enough, they're going to be in a Power 5 conference. So, yeah. You know, they've made their intentions known to move to the Big 12. So this is a huge game for Cincinnati. It's as big for Indiana because mm-hmm. they want to get into the Big 10 with only one loss. We already know the tough road that it is to be in the Big 10 East. So this is going to be, I think, a terrific showdown.
Purdue at Notre Dame. It feels really winnable for the Boilermakers.
It does, except I don't know what to make of Purdue right now. They've got 2 wins, one against Oregon State.
Fine.
Not a great win. Yeah. The other one against UConn, and they just, you know, their coach decided he was going to retire at the end of the season. They said, we are going to ask you to retire now.
That they might be the worst team in college football.
They very
bad.
Well could be. And Purdue just lost their running back, Xander Horvath, for 4 to 8 weeks because of a broken leg. So can they give Notre Dame a game? Absolutely. I just don't know what to make of Purdue yet.
Yeah. Game day will be in Happy Valley. Number 10 Penn State welcomes 22nd ranked Auburn. A whiteout for an SEC team. I think Penn State rolls. I think they are – I'm not super high on Auburn anyways, but I think that environment, that situation is going to be awesome. And I know this isn't involving a Pac-12 or an ACC team with Auburn, but these are the kinds of games that the Alliance wants to create, like what we saw in Columbus and in Ann Arbor, what we see this coming week. These are the games that I hope through all of this we get more of unique matchups in cool environments.
And this will be an audition for James Franklin now that the USC job has opened up.
Oh,
But we know what it's like to play in a whiteout. Uh-huh. We just saw the maze out here, and it's really difficult for those visiting teams to play in that environment. I think Penn State, their defense, they're a program right now that at that linebacker position, they just continually reload. Up front, they've been very productive with their defensive line. So defensively, I'm not sure that Auburn will be able to be very successful in moving the ball up and down the field.
And then the biggest game nationally, number one Alabama at 11th ranked Florida. Alabama is a 15-point favorite in the swamp. Any chance for the Gators?
I don't think so. You know, they lost their quarterback, Kyle Trask. He's now over in Tampa Bay. They lost Kyle Pitts, who was a huge part of that offense. He's now in Atlanta. I think that Florida is a really good football team, but they're just not going to be able to compete with the talent level, the depth of talent that Alabama has.
Number six on our 7 from 77, it was week one of the NFL as well. Just curious, your biggest takeaways. The Lions almost had the greatest comeback in NFL history.
It would have been a thing of beauty. And they kept it exciting.
They did.
And they were down by, 31 points going into the second half. I mean, it was just – and then to only lose by eight and have a chance to tie it at the end. A lot of things. You get a ball that bounces off a Pro Bowler's face mask. You get another wide receiver that picks up a first down but fumbles it, saves a timeout, saves the game, at least an opportunity to win the game. It was exciting. Now, defensively, it seems like a dumpster fire at Allen Park. But offensively, I was pleased. The second half for Jared Goff was much better than the first. He was much more accurate. And heck, if I'm Dan Campbell, I might just say, hey, let's go 2-minute offense or at least pick up the tempo at different times throughout the game, because Jared Goff operated extremely well in that environment. And to me, the rest of it was just about defense. I was amazed at some of the defensive efforts that we saw in the NFL. Chandler Jones with 5 sacks for Arizona. That was an unbelievable performance. And how about that Steeler defense? Mm. Only allowing 16 points by the Buffalo Bills, coming away with a 23-16 win. Not many people, including myself, thought that the Steelers could pull that one off. So a lot of really good football this weekend.
Yeah, it was one of the more lopsided lines was Buffalo being favored in that situation. And as we all thought, as we all knew, Houston on its way to a 17-0. Oh, wait, I thought it was supposed to be 0-7. How about that?
Well, Jacksonville won their first game last year and then proceeded to lose the rest of them. I'm not sure that too many people are in the overreaction that Houston is going to win many more games.
No, probably not. All right, number seven, let's pivot back to Michigan. Really excited about this conversation with Trevor Keegan, because he is on this offensive line, I think, the least known, based on you had Ryan Hayes, Andrew Vistardis, Andrew Stuber, guys who we knew about. They had started. They had some opportunity, stuff along those lines. Zach Zinner's been a big topic, A, for what he did as a true freshman, and then B, because he's had to battle some injuries early on this season. Keegan has come in. He's gotten an opportunity to start for the first time in his career. What have you seen from him in his two games at left guard and just the continuity of this team at the offensive line? Because they haven't played together a whole lot as this fivesome. But, man, through two games, you tell me, they've looked strong.
I like the addition of Zach Zinter to this offensive line. He came in at right guard. He's playing with a club on his hand. And I wanted to see – we knew he had an injury to his hand. He didn't play much in the first week. How important was this game to him? He taped it up. He did what he had to do to get out there and played extremely well. So I think that was a great addition. But for Trevor Keegan, the one thing that I notice about him is that his attention to detail. Playing next to Ryan Hayes, playing next to Andrew Vistardis, he's got a couple of guys with really good experience around him. And he doesn't have to know a lot in terms of the scheme, because he can just ask Andrew Vistardis what they're looking at. He's a 6-year guy. He's as smart as they come. He's going to tell him everything he needs to know. But in terms of his pad level, the way that he approaches the game in terms of his punch, and you can tell by his technique and the improvement from last year to this year, that his attention to detail has been there, because you don't run for 350 plus yards unless you're playing with good technique. You're, you know, at some point you're going to make a mistake that allows a linebacker or to allows one of those defensive tackles to penetrate and give you a tackle for a loss. He has been extremely good at mastering his technique and going out there and executing it. And I'm excited for the rest of the season to watch this offensive line continue to improve as they get to know each other better, as they continue to communicate and get better as a unit.
Before we get to that interview, today's Bacon Fact, from the 1606 poem, Wily Beguiled, the author, the narrator, described their lover by saying, quote, whose eyes do shine like bacon rind.
That's how I wooed my wife. Slab of bacon, and I just tried to compare whatever I could to bacon, and she just said, that's the most beautiful thing I've ever heard.
She is a saint. She is one of a kind, and I feel so, so badly for her.
Hey, you know who we don't feel bad for?
Transition.
That is Trevor Keegan, because he's a part of a dominant offensive line. Please enjoy the conversation that I had with Mr. Keegan.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
I am now joined by Trevor Keegan. Trevor, thanks for joining us. And Saturday night, I mean, it was unique. It was something that I've never seen at Michigan Stadium. I've never been there for a maze out before. What was it like for you when you came out of the tunnel and you saw that sight?
Yeah, I usually don't get nervous for games. But when we ran out there, man, I got the butterflies. My stomach was turning, and I was pretty nervous, not going to lie. And it was awesome. Our fans were great. You know, I feel like the Ann Arbor community really came together, and we thrived off of that.
When you took the field for the first time, the offense took the field, and you're looking around as you run out, did you notice it? Did it at some point just blend into what you guys were doing? How did it affect you during the game?
Yeah, I think, you know, they were still pretty loud the whole game. You know, it carried on. I think even the first play, we had a false start penalty. We couldn't even hear Cade's clap. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was awesome. We matched their energy. We thrived off of it. Yeah, it was awesome.
So if I told you as a recruit, hey, you're going to play a maze out game, and in that game you're going to run the ball 56 times, you're only going to have to pass that 15 times, how excited would you have been?
If I was a recruit, I would be pretty darn excited. You know, that's Michigan football. Back to the gridiron, you know, we work so hard to be physical and, you know, abstain the line of scrimmage. And, yeah, it's awesome. That would be great.
343 yards, over 330 yards in the first game. So you guys have run for nearly 700 yards so far this year. Where is the confidence level of this offensive line?
Yeah, so we're really confident right now. This started back in the spring when Coach Moore said that we need to put this team on our back. You know, the offensive line needs to be the leaders of this team. We need to be physical. We need to change our identity from last year. And ever since then, we've just been rolling, and our confidence is really high right now.
you guys, as I mentioned, I want to start with the positive, 343 yards. But in the first quarter, you guys get down to the one-yard line, and you can't punch it in. How frustrating and maddening was that for you guys?
Man, it was – yeah, it was frustrating because, you know, that wasn't our identity. We know there's going to be ups and downs throughout the season, and, you know, we really bounced back after that, so we were really happy about that.
How much did that – in the back of your minds, that moment motivates you guys through the rest of the game?
Yeah, because we were pushing it down the field on them, and we were really confident, and that kind of – it dipped us a little bit. But when we came off the sideline, Coach Moore was like, that's not us, that's not who we are, and he really pumped us up after that.
How much has Coach Moore meant to this offensive line and just how you guys go about your work?
Yeah, I think it starts off with his personality. He's a confident guy, high energy. And we've matched that. We've become more confident. We've had higher energy. And I feel like we've put the team on our back, honestly. We're the closest group on the team. We're the funniest guys on the team. And, yeah, it's been
smartest
awesome.
And best looking, too. Let's not stop
That's
there.
Right. That's right.
Andrew Vistardis, here at center, he's as smart as they come, as experienced as these come. He's in his sixth year. The advantage that you have of having a player like that next to you.
Absolutely. You know, props to V. He's made me a better football player, even though he's had such great strides this year as well. Like, he's making himself so much better. He's making the people around him better. That's why he's the ultimate leader.
And coming into camp, we felt like, all right, we knew five or six guys that were going to be in the starting lineup. And in talking to Coach Moore, in talking to Coach Harbaugh, there's been a lot of other guys that have pushed those starters. How deep is this offensive line? If someone were to go down, how much confidence do you have the next man up is going to step in and do what they have to do?
Oh, yeah. We're really confident with our one and two group. We feel like if anybody were to go down, we would jump. Someone would jump right in. There wouldn't be, you know, any hesitation. You know, I feel like we're 10, 11 deep and full of starters. And, yeah, we're really confident in us.
Last year it was unique because you had one unit in one room, another unit in another room, and you guys could never be together for obvious reasons in case there was contact tracing. How good does it feel just to be somewhat back to normal and everybody be in the same room?
Yeah, it's great. So last year, obviously, we had everybody split up. You know, like we would be in a different room with Vistardis, Hayes, Stuber. Like we'd all be split up. And now that we're back together, I could look at Vistardis or Hayes and like talk over our calls and what we would do on that on that play. You know, it's been great. We've been gelling well together. We're really close as a group, as a unit, and it's coming alive on the field.
The confidence of this offensive line has got to be at an all-time high. And when you look and you say, okay, well, we've played well, what is it that you look at and you say, you know what, we could do better?
Yeah, I feel like when they bring pressure, they try to add in the box, we got to do a better job of communicating and figuring out like where we have to go. And when we have like split zones, slices, we need to figure out what spot we're going to. I feel like we could do that better. And not having our heads too high. You know, we haven't really done anything yet. There's still 10 games left in the season.
You mentioned you guys haven't done anything yet. Well, I mean, 343 yards, that's pretty damn good. And coming into this season, everybody was talking, Michigan's not ranked. There's, you know, very few preseason All-Americans. Everybody's talking poorly about Michigan. Now the narrative hasn't completely changed, but you guys are ranked 25. You're working your way back into it. You're 2-0. How are you guys handling the pats on the back and making sure that you continue to improve and do the job that you have to do?
Yeah, so we came into the season knowing that we're going to be the underdogs, and we wanted that. Coach Harbaugh said to the team, you know, like, what's wrong with being the underdog? And I feel like that's why we worked so hard this offseason. And now that we're ranked, I feel like we don't really see that as such an amazing thing. You know, we're going to keep our head down and keep working because last year we whooped Minnesota. We came in, we got crushed by the team up north. And, yeah, so we're just going to keep our head down and keep working.
Everybody that I've talked to, whether it's been Cade or Aiden, they somewhat reference that Minnesota game and then the rest of the year last year. How much does that continue to motivate you guys?
Yeah, we knew that was Michigan football last year. Obviously, we beat Minnesota pretty easily, and ever since then, just continued to die down. But we knew that wasn't our identity, and we wanted to change that this year, so we're going to continue to do so.
This week, you've got Northern Illinois. What is it that you guys want to try and accomplish this week?
Yeah, just keep going. We're trying to reach that climax on offense, defense, just play as a team. And I feel like that's what we've been doing really well lately.
The defense across from you guys out at the practice field, a lot of question marks coming into the season as to what a Mike McDonald defense was going to look like. From your perspective, what have you seen from the Michigan defense?
Yeah, they've been playing amazing. They played really well on Saturday night. You know, they've been practicing well. They really do a good job of playing together, and they've been playing confident. And you know, when they're playing well, we're playing well, and it makes our team better.
What's the chatter like at practice between the offense and the defense as to who won a drill? And just that competition that you have between, you know, offense and defense generally, but between competitive people, especially offensive and defensive line.
Yeah, those competitive periods, we go at it. We always, obviously, we want to win. They want to win. And, you know, not every day the offense is going to win. Not every day the defense is going to win. And when it's lopsided like that, I feel like that's when you know you have a pretty good team.
We're number 77. Do you feel like you got a lot of eyeballs on you?
I do, and I knew that coming in. I was offered to wear it, and I wanted to. You know, I want to make the Michigan community proud, and I want to be to obtain that legacy, your legacy. You know,
well,
I just want
really,
to make
it's really Jake Long, it's Taylor Lewan,
you, Jake
those
Long,
guys.
Taylor Lewan, yeah. Yep. And I just want to make it proud. I want to do it myself. I have high goals, and I want to continue to, you know, rock the 77.
Well, appreciate your time. Best of luck against Northern Illinois. And when that's done, it's the Big Ten season. How much would it mean for you, this offensive line, this team, to win a Big Ten championship?
Yeah, that's definitely on our goal list. We came in the season with a lot of goals, and that's on there. And you know, that's what we're striving to do, and we're going to continue to work for it.
Well, appreciate your time, and best of luck, and stay healthy.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, I want to thank Trevor for his time, as we always do. I want to thank you for listening. Please like, subscribe, send us your comments. Make sure you let us know what you're enjoying most about the podcast. If you missed anything, obviously hit the rewind button and go and listen to it again. Friday, I will have my keys to the game as well as a locker room speech. Post game, we'll repackage everything that you hear after the game, some player sound, some coach sound, Brian and I breaking down the game. And you can find it all on MGO Blue Podcast. We thank you for listening to our latest edition of In the Trenches.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of In the Trenches with John Jansen, part of our Michigan Athletics Podcast Network, MGO Blue Podcasts. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation of the Michigan Sports Network.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.